Welcome to the Classicist Podcast from Ricochet.com, brought to you by Helix Sleep. I'm your host, Troy Sinek, and the classicist is Victor Davis Hanson, the Martin and Neely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution. And Victor, we did an impromptu episode of the show last week because right as we were recording, crowds were swarming into the Capitol. Always dodgy doing an episode like that because you just don't know how events are going to develop or what you may be missing in the moment. But we're more than a week's remove from it now. With that distance, how would you characterize what happened that day in Washington and what it means for the country?
Well, there's two narratives and they're competing narratives. And I guess what I'm saying is there's still two narratives, but when we talked a week ago, there was only one, that it was an armed insurrection. And the second, and it was indicative of Donald Trump, and he's a fascist, and all his supporters need to be deprogrammed or reeducated. I think Meghan McCain said some of them sent to Gitmo that were at the Capitol. And it's gone way overboard. I mean, there were people in this San Joaquin Valley area that were on school boards, or and they posted on Facebook that they were at the Trump rally, but not in the violent portion. And they are in big trouble. People are canceling them. They're losing jobs. So it's so anyway, that narrative continues, and it's being enhanced by his Twitter and Facebook and Amazon to deplatform Donald Trump, cancel and bar him, his some of his associates, except that the whole Silicon Valley social media attack, and then that's been enhanced by another corporate culture of sort of not giving to particular Republican candidates, Joe Biden weighing in that Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley or Goebbels-like propagandist Nazis, in other words. So there's been this whole demonization of anybody who took their complaints about the election beyond, let's say, an arbitrary date of December 11th when the electors met. So that's continuing. I'm a little cynical. I think a lot of it is a preemptory prepping the battlefield for the real war that's coming, if I can use that metaphorical term without getting in trouble. And that is right after January 21st, the Democratic Senate is going to march in there. Bang, 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 no more filibuster. Then we go to Puerto Rico. We go to a national mail-in voting bill. We go to packing the court, all of these. And they want to make sure that there's not a lot of opposition on social media or that people are afraid of speaking out. So a lot of that is this preemptory attack. And then there's the other narrative. And the other narrative is now Catherine Hetrich in Network News has pointed out that a lot of the activity that was violent at the Capitol was occurring either simultaneously with or at least prior to when Donald Trump's speech ended. And that was important because if he's charged with inciting a riot, because he said, now we're going to go over the Capitol, albeit he did say peacefully and patriotically, then it's very hard to say that he's responsible for violence when people were already separately from his group breaking into the Capitol. So that's a new development. I think that's important in terms of impeachment. So they impeached Donald Trump yesterday. And the problem with that is that this was the third time that they introduced articles of impeachment. They did it in 2017 in December. It failed, 58 votes. They did it in December 2019. They succeeded but failed to convict. And now they've done it a third time, and they impeached him successfully, but they're not going to convict him. So I don't think they'll even have a vote. And the idea they can do it after he's out of office is constitutionally absurd. And so what happened with that was there was no special counsel. There was no Ken Starr report. There was no Robert Mueller 22-month investigation. There was no cross-examine. There were no legal eagles that were on opposite sides of the congressional hall battling about whether incitement, what it was, what its legal description is, whether it's a high crime and misdemeanor. None of that. No, nothing. There was nothing but virtue signaling stump speeches. And so it was a very absurd impeachment, especially when he was going to be gone in 7 or 8 days. And you couple that with the fact that Donald Trump can't tweet now. And that means, in a weird way, they thought they were going to stop his communications, and they did, but they also stopped his pushback. And in a weird way, I think what we might be seeing is a change in momentum, that now Donald Trump, he's sort of like the, you know, the dead Hector that people come over and stab his corpse, or Patroclus in the Iliad, that after he's dead, every Achaean warrior takes a spear and hits him again and again. Donald Trump is politically inert, and yet everybody wants to get in and destroy his reputation or his movement. And so they did this phony impeachment. This came on top of the phony 25th Amendment effort at an 11th hour that he was crazy, etc. And now that he can't, you know, get angry and return it in kind, I think there's a sense that, wow, let's just look at what he did. He got this vaccination within 9 or 10 months, and people are not getting vaccinated. And whose fault was that? It's people like Gavin Newsom and Andrew Cuomo. It's the governors, not the government, that did everything it could with Operation Warp Speed. Wow, there's people coming in across the border. Why didn't they come across the border illegally before? Because Donald Trump kept them out. I could go on. I don't want to be an apologist for him. But what I'm saying is that you're looking at the record now, and he can't communicate, and he's been done a disservice. And what he's guilty of is bad judgment. That when you lose, even if it's a contested, fraudulent, whatever your term is, there was no proof that he could find in the requisite amount of time that would show that he had that 44,000 votes in those key states to overturn the Electoral College. And when you don't have that, because the courts, for fairly or unfairly, or the recounts fairly or unfairly, or the data fairly doesn't show that, then, and you keep pressing, then you're going to take a political hit. He did, especially in Georgia, when it kind of turned off the swing voters, and it gave the message to his own supporters in Georgia, well, your vote won't be counted. And between those two phenomenon, he lost Georgia. Whereas, we talked last time, I thought, if you'll just accept this crooked bargains, if I could use the term, of 1824, and then, like Andrew Jackson, storm into Georgia, win that, take proper credit for stopping socialism by keeping the Republican Senate, and then storm and barnstorm like Richard Nixon did in 1966 and 64, 66 and 65, win everybody's hearts by, winning more seats in the Senate in the midterms and taking back the House, we wouldn't be talking like we are today. So, and finally, the other thing, final thing real quickly about the impeachment was, not only was there not a special counsel, not only wasn't it conducted right, but there was no need ever for a first term impeachment. They usually in the 20th century have been second term. They were going to impeach Nixon had he not resigned in the second term, Clinton in the second term, because you don't have another election coming up. With Trump, you did. So the election should have solved their problem. In fact, they did it 3 times. You go with the Logan Act, the Emoluments Act, 25th Amendment, Stormy, all of that stuff was just, it was sort of like those characters in the Caine Mutiny. Whatever problems Quig had, they made sure that he could not function. And that's what they did to Trump. And then I would add, he who is without incitement sin, let him cast the first stone. So when Chuck Schumer gets out of the Supreme Court, outside the very doors with a mob of pro-abortion protesters while the court is in session in March of this last year, and he says, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, you're going to reap the whirlwind. You don't have any idea what's going to hit you. You're going to pay a price. Or Kamala Harris says, these demonstrations, which were violent, are going to continue, and it's not going to stop. And then she helps bail out people convicted of street violence. Or Nancy Pelosi, in front of the nation, tears up into tiny little pieces the State of the Union address of the President of the United States. That's pretty insightful. As is Joe Biden, who says, I don't want to just argue with Donald Trump, I want to do what I did in high school and take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him. He said that as a candidate in June, said it earlier as vice president of the United States. So there's plenty of incitement on the side of the left that people also knew. And so the hypocrisy made the impeachment even more regrettable. And now Joe Biden will enter office with the specter that as soon as Republicans win the House, and I think they will, somebody's going to introduce articles of impeachment to go look and appoint a special counsel to look at the Biden Incorporated shakedown of foreign leaders in Ukraine and China for Biden family money and the 10% for the big guy. And then we're going to have a 25th Amendment ruse where somebody says, you know, Joe Biden blacked out on, he couldn't remember where he was. He's not fit. And that was my point, is that you never destroy institutions that can provide a refuge for yourself on the premise that you'll never need them. You always are going to need them in extremists. So they destroyed this idea of impeachment as a very solemn occasion of the 25th Amendment for medical, real medical emergencies, and special counsel is a rare investment of, you know, plenipotentiary powers and a prosecutor. And they regularize them, weaponize them, and they're going to be weaponized against them when they take power.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about the tech angle of this. So in the aftermath of what happened at the Capitol, the president's response to it, as you say, Twitter banned him from the platform permanently. And there have been, at the very least, restrictions placed on virtually all of his social media accounts across platforms, some of them shut down, which led a lot of Trump supporters to say, well, we're going to move over to Parler, which is this alternative microblogging site, sort of a Twitter for people on the right. And then Amazon's Web Services division announces that it's no longer going to be hosting Parler, which could very well be the death knell of the company. It makes it very, very hard for them to keep the site up. Now, you've had concerns for a long time. We've talked about them before, about the kind of power that the biggest tech firms have. And you will hear, you know, certain people on the right who will say, you know what, these are private companies, they can do what they want. There is really no public policy question here. What's your reaction to the latest moves from these tech companies?
Well, I've been consistent for about 10 years. Google owns about 85% of the world's searches. And I think Facebook has about 60% of the world's social media. Twitter of that particular genre has got about 90%. Okay, then anytime you have a startup, successful company, Snapchat, I don't know what all the names of them, YouTube, they buy them up. So basically, they're following the 19th century Carnegie, John D. Rockefeller model, Leland Stanford model, Big Four model on the railroads. They're monopolizing and they're vertically integrating. They're trying to destroy all competition. Okay, and how do they get away with that? Well, they go to the right. So they go over to, say, the Hoover Institution where I work, and they say, hey, you guys, we're your models. We're entrepreneurs. We're up by the bootstraps, laissez-faire entrepreneurs. We create capital and jobs, all true. And then they go over to the left, and they say, you know, these stupid right-wing people fell for that stuff, but believe me, all the money is going to go to you. Here's $200 million for Joe Biden's presidential campaign. Here's $500 million to pay registrars and precincts to enhance the vote in particular areas where we think it'll help Joe Biden win. And that's how they got away with it. And then they have this sort of, they get all of these corporate lawyers, these megaphones to say, we're private companies. We don't have to follow the First Amendment. If you're on an airline, you can't say, you know, screw you, because we have codes. Okay, but they're not private companies. Whether they want to admit it or not, they're utilities. They use the public airspace. And people, just like they broke up Bell Phone, I think, in 1983, they don't have a lot of choices. Not when you get on the internet and Google massages your search. So if you say Donald Trump threatened, all the searches will have Donald Trump active verb threaten somebody. It will never have that until you get to about the 500th entry, or you have to get a Gmail. What does Gmail stand for? Google Mail. And so they do have it. And when the railroad said, you know, I grew up in a farming family that, you know, really despise the railroads for a variety of good reasons in the 19th century. But when the railroad says, take a horse, and they did, if you don't like our railroads, you don't want to pay our cartel rates, then just get on your horse or get your buckboard and go sell your raisins. Well, that's what they say. If you don't like Twitter or Facebook, haha, go to Parler. But then they destroy Parler. And so they're a public utility, and they don't have the right to just tell people, we're going to rig this use of the public airspace, and we're going to vertically integrate it, and we're going to destroy all competition, and then we're going to massage and weaponize it for our left-wing agendas, and we're going to turn over your free speech to some 20-year-old or 25-year-old Stanford graduate that's sitting in a, you know, cartel, Carol at a cartel in Menlo Park. And I don't think they're going to get away with it. I think there's righteous anger at them, and they should all be broken up. It would be much nicer to have a bunch of, you know, 10% of this market, 20% of this market, 30% of this market competition. And then we might not have to, you know, when we get Google and we turn on our Google search and it doesn't have anything about Christmas, it's got all secular, then there'd be another search that would have this and another with that. And they'd all have certain market share. I'm not saying, you know, give market share just at this percentage to this person, but don't allow them to destroy other people and their businesses. There's no public support for them anymore. I don't see it. And I think the left is getting angry at them before, and the right now wised up finally.
All right, we're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsors, right back after this. The Classicist Podcast is brought to you by Helix Sleep. There's nobody on the planet like you, so why would you buy a generic mattress built for everyone else? Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. With Helix, you're getting a mattress that you know will be perfect for the way you sleep. Everybody's unique, and Helix knows that, so they have several different mattress models to choose from. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot. And even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size folks. I took the Helix quiz, and I was matched with the Midnight Lux mattress, and it sleeps incredibly. So if you're looking for a mattress, you take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again. Helix is awesome, but you don't need to take my word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. Just go to helixsleep.com/classicist, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but you will. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/classicist. And we thank Helix Sleep for sponsoring the Classicist Podcast.